Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
And a hail and hearty good Thursday. I'm Jeff Munn in for Brad Sesmatt. In case you don't know who I am, and that includes a lot of people don't know who I am, I'm broadcaster of the Arizona Diamondbacks and the play-by-play voice of Arizona State women's basketball. But today, I'm filling in for Brad, and you'll find out very quickly why Brad is not here. In fact, we're going to tell you right now, because we're going to go via Skype to the Moda Center in Portland, where Brad Sesmatt is just an hour away from the start of March Madness up in Portland, with second-seeded Arizona taking on 15th-seeded Texas Southern. First of all, is there any way to properly surmise, Brad, what the atmosphere is in that building right now?
Well, they opened the doors, Jeff, about 20 minutes ago, and it's going to be a UMA home game. There's no other way to put this. The city of Portland last night, and walking downtown, there's 8 colleges that are out here. And those 8 colleges, none of them come close to the fan base walking around downtown Portland than what I saw at U of A last night. That's no different than Las Vegas. It's no different than any place U of A plays. So I'd say to this building, they're probably going to be about 95%, 98% fans from U of A. And they're playing a team in Texas Southern that doesn't travel that well, travels at all. And it's actually a pretty intriguing matchup, Jeff, I think. The fact that it's an early morning start time, you wonder about body clocks for players if you're ready to go. U of A had a shoot around this morning here at the Moda Center just after 7 a.m. And I'm interested to see how they play the first 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, that's always a factor with those morning tip-offs. Let me remind our friends tuning in that our special thanks to Corals and Brady LLP, Sports 360 AZ's exclusive partner for the Arizona Wildcats track through March Madness. They have offices across the country, including Phoenix, Scottsdale, and Tucson. For more, visit www.corals.com. The thing with mid-majors, Brad, and I think this has been true with the tournament for a number of years, is that a lot of times these mid-major teams, number one, they don't have a lot of size. And as a result, they're going to utilize as much pressure defense. They're going to try to utilize all 94 feet of the floor on defense. Is that the way you see Texas Southern playing this game today?
You broke up there a little bit, Jeff, but I think I understand the question. And they cannot get into a track meet with the U of A. The guard play, when it comes to March Madness, is huge. And I'll encourage any fan that is just not watched U of A, even you ASU fans, okay, get yourself off a ledge and just watch somebody who's a very talented point guard in TJ McConnell. McConnell for the U of A, he's usually 2 or 3 steps ahead of the action. Someday he'll be a head coach, Jeff. You know it when you see players that are so smart on the floor. He's the son of a coach. Damon Stoudemire's on the Wildcat staff. He's, of course, very popular up here. He's worked with TJ McConnell immensely. And quite frankly, for Texas Southern, I don't see anybody, any way, shape, or form that can match up with TJ McConnell. I think that the guard play, obviously, is big in these tournaments. And if TJ McConnell gets into foul trouble, that's where I think U of A is vulnerable here. I've seen enough of them play this year that when McConnell's not on the floor, it's just a different ball club. You can say that about 200 NCAA teams, but you've got to make sure that he stays on the floor and runs the show. So I think if you see full court pressure being applied by U of A and try to get right into them the opening few minutes, if the Tigers can't respond to that, if Texas Southern can't handle the full court pressure, and U of A gets after them, Sean Miller likes to substitute liberally within the first few minutes. You'll see him get 8, 9 guys on the floor in and out of the game to get them into the flow of the game. They can just wear you down, and that's what's really expected up here today in a 2-15 matchup. But I will tell you, you know, Texas Southern, Jeff, beat Michigan State back on December 20th. Since then, they're 21-4. And that wasn't a fluke victory. And they also beat Kansas State this year. So this is a tougher 2-15 matchup than just on the surface where you look at it and say, U of A is going to roll. Of course, U of A fans feel that. I kind of look at this open-minded. Last night we had dinner with Greg Byrne, the athletic director at U of A, and there was no conversation at all about Saturday's game or Los Angeles. This is definitely a one-step-at-a-time game.
Now, and Brad Sesmatt joins us from the Moda Center in Portland, and again, Arizona plays Texas Southern in about an hour from now. And we're joining you on the Brad Sesmatt Show on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. Okay, if the key is to get T.J. McConnell into some foul trouble, that means that Texas Southern's guards have to penetrate, and they've got to kind of bring McConnell along for the ride when they attack the hoop. And I guess that's the question from the Texas Southern standpoint. Are their guards capable of putting enough pressure when they have the ball on McConnell to force him to commit fouls?
Yeah, I mean, again, you broke up there briefly, but I think that while U of A in their shoot-around yesterday and what they were practicing on yesterday, it's all about U of A, and it's not about, look, you got to be on number 20, you got to be on number 30, you got to be on number 5, things along those lines. This is more about them taking care of business. And Jeff, another angle to watch in today's game is Stanley Johnson has been terrific for the U of A this year, freshman of the year in the conference and all that stuff. And I think the easy narrative is, well, he's played in big games in high school. He played over in Maui. He's played in the Pac-12 tournament. That's all well and good, but this is a completely different deal. You know, you get into March Madness and you're one and done, and if you have one of those slow starts or you have a game where you're not into the flow, I asked Sean Miller about it directly, and he kind of bristled at the question, like, you know, of course he's going to be fine. I don't know that. So I'm very interested to see how Stanley Johnson plays the first half of this game. He may come up big late, but I've seen freshmen come into these bright lights, and all of a sudden they just don't get into the flow of the game, and they become a non-factor. So, again, I'm not avoiding the question. I think it's just, up here, it's all about what will U of A do, not so much what Texas Southern's all about.
I understand that completely. Brad, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the games. There are four of them on tap today at the Moda Center, so have fun, and we'll talk to you soon.
You know, Moda is a medical company up here, by the way, Jeff.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea. I was asking security guards this morning at 8 a.m. They said, what's Moda? I don't know. Finally, one of them said it's medical. So we would know this as the Rose Garden.
That's true. Yeah. Well, have fun, Brad.
See
you later. Brad Sesmatt joining us live from the Moda Center in Portland, Oregon. And again, our thanks to Corals and Brady LLP, Sports 360 AZ's exclusive partner for the Arizona Wildcats trek through March Madness. They have offices across the country, including Phoenix, Scottsdale, and Tucson. Visit www.corals.com. All right, there are other things going on in the world of sports, and let's get to some of the top stories aside from Arizona playing in the NCAA tournament. And those top stories are brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino, located in the beautiful White Mountains just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head up now, enjoy ski season before it ends, and make sure you stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. Some of the other things, and we do have a few other little sound bites we can drop in from Arizona's approaching game against Texas Southern. And let's focus on that with T.J. McConnell. He was asked, when you look at Texas Southern on film, what do you see?
Oriented, and they can all shoot, so we're going to have to all be ready to close out and make them drivers and, you know, just play good defense. And, you know, they played a very hard non-conference schedule, and, you know, they'll be ready for us.
Yeah, I would expect, and I think Brad was absolutely right, this is not your normal 2-against-15 matchup. But in cases like this, and I think this is something else that Brad was spot on in pointing out, when you have matchups like this, and coaches talk about it all the time, it's more about our team, what is our team doing, what do we need to do better, than worrying so much about what the other team is going to do. You're consciously aware of it, of course, because you look at film and you scout a team, but you don't get so, what's the word I'm looking for? You don't get so obsessed with what another team is doing. You have to do certain things, and you have to do them well. So that's, and I know that's the point that Brad was trying to make in relation to how Arizona approaches this game this afternoon. One other thing from college basketball, as we discussed on the show yesterday, I'm not trying to take any credit for this, but Arizona State did defeat UConn last night, first round of the NIT, 68-61. Tremendous performance for Shaquille McKissick. I have some thoughts. Well, I'll get to them later.
I know one of the thoughts you have is, dang, I wish we would have made that friendly wager like we were thinking about, because you and I would be going to lunch and my pocketbook would be a little bit thinner.
And I'd be choosing the place to go to lunch, and your pocketbook would be taking a huge hit.
Yep. All you can eat at Chick-fil-A.
We've got such a loaded show today. Maybe I ought to get this out of the way now. I did not. I did the ASU baseball game on radio last night because Tim Healy is up with men's basketball. And I get to Muni, and they have the game. By the way, that gentleman that just spoke was Eric Sorensen. I didn't introduce you. I'm sorry. It's terrible of me to do that.
Hi. If you watch the stream, you're familiar with me. I'm here every day.
That's true. I saw they put the video feed, the ESPN telecast, up on the video screen at Phoenix Muni Stadium, and it seemed like every 5 seconds they were going to a shot of the two announcers. I don't know who the play-by-play guy was. The analyst was Fran Fraschilla, and Jim Calhoun was sitting with him. Now, I don't have to have the sound up to know that Jim Calhoun was not talking about Shaquille McKissick and Trey Holder, okay? He was talking about UConn. And at that point, I'm thinking to myself, does ESPN have any idea who UConn's playing? Are they at all concerned with UConn's opponent? My guess is probably not.
Where is ESPN located?
Yeah,
again?
I know. You know what?
Bristol, what?
A quick note, Uncle Jeff's story time. You know what the original intention of that channel was? To show University of Connecticut sports. That's it.
Wow.
The two guys, Bill Rasmussen and his son, started that network. And they were wanting to do was, you know, almost like a public access channel, put on University of Connecticut sports. So I guess in a way I'm not too surprised. Okay, what else we got going on? NBA tonight, the Suns play New Orleans. They are 2.5 games back of the Pelicans, who are in the 9th spot, which is obviously not in the playoff seating. So the Suns have got to jump New Orleans first before they can think about Oklahoma City, and they only got a month left in the season. So this is a huge game tonight at U.S. Airways Center. Latest on the NFL, and we will have Albert Breuer from NFL.com on with us later on. Adrian Peterson's agent is apparently, or the Vikings have said, they will not release Adrian Peterson, which essentially means if the Cardinals want to get him, or anybody else does for that matter, they're going to have to work out a trade. That's not too surprising. I mean, of course the Vikings aren't just going to cut him loose. So that's not one of those huge earth-shattering moments. Baseball, D-backs won last night over the Rockies, yippee-yi-yo-ki-yay, because it's spring training, and they've been 3 in a row. The bigger note is Yasmani Tomas, a couple of hits last night. Apparently, he also committed an error. I haven't seen enough of Tomas to say with certainty what the immediate future is for the young man, but certainly, as the D-backs have said all along, if he can hit, they're going to find a place for him on the 25-man. So that's kind of the way you approach this. Our guest list today, you've already heard from Brad. We're going to have Albert Breuer, as I said, from the NFL Network. The owners' meetings are here starting Sunday, and you're already starting to hear some word about rule proposals and rule changes that are going to be discussed. We'll also have our buddy Tim Kempton on, radio analyst for the Suns, to talk about tonight's matchup between the Suns and the Pelicans. And again, I don't want to say this is make or break for the Suns tonight, but it's pretty close to it. So a huge game, and we'll discuss it with TK and get his thoughts on how the team is progressing from the trade deadline deals and how they're meshing. And I do think that even with the injuries to Brandon Knight and to Alex Lynn, that you're seeing a little bit more cohesiveness with the unit that Jeff Hornacek puts out on the floor. The only question now is there enough time to make a charge at a playoff spot? They're 3.5 games back of Oklahoma City, 2.5 back of New Orleans. So that's a guest list today. And obviously, we'll keep our eyes peeled on the NCAA tournament as it is already underway. The Arizona-Texas Southern game kicks off the day in Portland, and it will tip off in about an hour or so from when we're talking right now. So when we come back, we'll get Albert Breuer on, and we will talk about these upcoming NFL owners' meetings. All those things that made you mad during the playoffs, are they going to be talked about at all this weekend? We'll ask Albert Breuer coming up next.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Brad Sesmatch Show on a Thursday. Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks in for Brad. Brad's up in Portland getting ready to watch Arizona and Texas Southern in the NCAA tournament. This Sunday kicks off the NFL spring meetings at the Biltmore here in the Valley. And even if they weren't in the Valley, this is something that we need to talk about because this is the meeting where a lot of newsworthy things occur amongst the owners. And we wanted to get Albert Breuer, NFL Network insider, on with us to talk about that and a number of other things. And Albert, I'm going to start because obviously there's an awful lot of interest here amongst the Cardinal fan base, excuse me, about the status of things with Adrian Peterson. And this sounds to me like this is going to, there's going to be a few more twists and turns before we reach a conclusion. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, there's an issue there, and it's really not between Adrian Peterson and the football people in Minnesota. It's between Adrian Peterson and Kevin Warren, who is the lead lawyer for the team who worked with the league to get Adrian Peterson put on that list, and in effect, which wound up costing him the entire 2014 season. And so, I felt since the beginning, and then talking to people there that Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer and North Turner and all the guys in the football side of the building have wanted Adrian Peterson back. And I think they've got the go-ahead now from ownership. Can they fix that bridge? It's going to be difficult. I think the one thing that a lot of people aren't paying as much attention to here that's important is the money. He's on the books for $13 million for next year. The Vikings are willing to pay that. I don't know how many other teams are willing to go that far financially to bring Adrian Peterson in. And certainly cap space is drying up across the league and teams have their budgets and everything else. And so each day that passes with Adrian Peterson still on the Vikings roster increases the likelihood that he's going to be a Minnesota Viking in 2015. And again, like most other things in the NFL, I think money drives that.
Money drives a lot of things, and we're talking with Albert Breer, NFL Network insider, and ability drives a lot of things, and it ties into the Cowboys signing Greg Hardy. Now, people will have their issues with Hardy and some of the things that have gone on off the field, but the fact remains this guy is a pretty strong football player, a very dynamic talent, and at the end of the day, if you're a football team, that's what you've got to concentrate on, and I'm certain that was the case in the offices at Cowboy Stadium in Arlington.
Well, look at the three guys who got in trouble in September. The three guys were at the center of everything. Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, and Greg Hardy. I mean, there's a reason why Ray Rice is still looking for a job and the other two aren't. And the main reason is because Ray Rice averaged 3.1 yards per carry and is a running back that many people see as being over the hill. So the talent doesn't meet the risk anymore with Ray Rice. The talent meets the risk still with Adrian Peterson. And as bad as what Greg Hardy was accused of doing, the talent still meets the risk with Greg Hardy. He's 26 years old. He's had 27 sacks over his last 29 games. Guys like that just don't hit the market. And so that's why there's a market for him, because you don't find guys like that just sitting out in the street. And, as callous as it sounds, and as horrifying as everything that happened in the fall was, the fact of the matter is that the talent often dictates a lot of these decisions. And so, the fact that the Cowboys could bring in a guy at a need position, he's got a premium skill, and one that isn't readily available, either in the draft or out in the street in free agency, I mean, that wound up being too enticing for them, And so they get him at a price that works for them. A price that's lower than the price that you normally be paying for a guy like that, you roll the dice and you see what happens. I think the important thing for the Cowboys was, protecting themselves from a financial standpoint, which they were able to do, and not marrying the guy contractually. And, those are the things they're able to do, but they certainly, if he plays well, I mean, they're going to be paying him like a premium pass rusher.
Albert Breer, NFL Network insider, joins us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munden for Brad. Okay, these meetings that start Sunday, they're always these are vital meetings from a football standpoint, because rule changes are discussed at these meetings annually. And one of the things that I've seen among the list of things being proposed are a number of proposals to tweak the instant replay system, including allowing more challenges of more things that go on in the game. Is there a danger, and what kind of chatter are you hearing from coaches and especially those on the competition committee about the danger of slowing down the pace of play if they kind of widen the scope of replay?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it would really slow down much, to be honest with you. I think that's a common mistake made by people. The thing is, you've got a limited number of challenges. Now, if you expand it where coaches have more challenges, you can challenge anything at any time, that's different. But being able to challenge anything isn't necessarily going to slow things down. It just allows you to challenge different things. And I think the big thing for coaches in this, and I think this is why coaches are going to be behind it. Ultimately, they don't control whether the league, so the rule goes in or not. But ultimately, what coaches want here is high-impact penalties to be called correctly. And if it takes a review to get there, I think coaches, want to go there. And so, as far as the replay thing, I think that, again, the football people would all support that type of stuff, whether or not the owners do, because they're looking out for the interest, of course, in the TV networks, of the audience, and all the rest of that. Yeah, that's the real question. And so, I think there's a misperception out there that making more things reviewable would mean more reviews. It doesn't necessarily mean that, because coaches would still be dealing with the same number of challenges. It's more about getting the high impact calls correct. And maybe they don't go to everything right away. Maybe they go to only 15 yard plus penalties. But one way or another, I think the coaches really want to find the way to make sure that the highest impact penalties are called correctly.
Albert Breer, the NFL Network, with us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. I want to jump around to a couple of things. I don't think you usually hear something really substantial out of these meetings regarding franchise relocation. But will the owners, from what you understand, get some details about what's going on with the stadium proposal that the Raiders and Chargers are involved with, and where Stan Kroenke and the Rams stand on things?
Yeah, they're going to get an update. It's going to be a big topic of conversation. And to me, this is the beginning of the run-up to a team landing in Los Angeles in 2016. I don't think this is going to crystallize until probably October or November. So we're well into the fall. But there's certainly conflict with what's out there, and that conflict created competition between the projects, which is exactly what the NFL wants. On one hand, you've got the probably the better project on a bigger plot of land, a more desirable plot of land, in Inglewood, and that's Stan Kroenke's project. So that's the better project that probably gives the NFL a better chance to succeed in Los Angeles long term. The problem is that the team that's running that project, the Rams, are the least qualified of the three by the relocation guidelines to move. The Raiders and Chargers are in a much more dire stadium situation. So if you look at the letter of the law, the way the NFL has it set up, those two teams would be more qualified to move. On top of that, the league wants two teams in a facility, whether it's in Inglewood, Carson, wherever. And that arrangement's already done with the Raiders and Chargers. So they have that going for them. So I don't think there's much of a question that we're going to have a team in Dodger Stadium or the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum in 2016. Since the race is on now to figure out which one it is, that discussion will happen this week. We're not going to have anything final, though, I think until at least the fall.
Let me ask you one other thing regarding rules, Albert, because I mentioned before you came on that if there was something that upset fans during the playoffs regarding rules, and there were a couple, they would probably get discussed at these meetings. I know that the word Deflategate's probably going to get tossed around a little bit.
Yeah.
But let's go from that for a second and talk about catch or no catch, because to me, that was one that I actually think kind of stuck in some people's craws a little bit more than deflating footballs. And I'm almost certain that, too, is going to come up as a talking point during the next during these meetings.
Yeah, it is. And, the competition committee guys, Rich McKay and Jeff Fisher, said so on the conference call yesterday. What they're going to look to do now is they're not going to change the rule, but they're going to look to clarify it. And I'll be honest with you, Jeff. The way I look at this stuff, I've used this example a couple of times already. But when you're 12 years old and you're playing out at recess on the pavement or whatever, you're playing touch, or if you've got the guts to, you're playing tackle out there. And I can't remember ever having a question as a kid: what was the catch? You know it when you see it, and what's difficult about this is I think all of us, we know it when we see it, because you grow up knowing what's a catch and what isn't a catch. But how do you put that into words? So, that's the difficult thing, and I think that's what they have to clarify here. And, there's certainly, I think, just some element of common sense that we have to inject into the whole thing, because anybody who watched what Dez did in that game, I mean, I think everybody halfway fell out of their seats.
Yeah.
You know? And that, to me, I mean, I watched that, you watched that. Now, by the letter of the law, it wasn't a catch. But did anybody, would anybody watch that not say, what a great catch? Feels to me like we have to find a way to inject some sort of common sense based on, I guess, the inner 12-year-old in all of us to figure out how to do this. But they're going to look to clarify that. You know, hopefully they find a way to, you know, again, inject some more of that common sense into the rules.
Well, as usually is the case, as I said, it'll be a very interesting couple of days at the Biltmore. Albert, I appreciate the time. Look forward to having you here in the Valley for a couple of days. And I really appreciate you coming on today. Thanks for the visit.
Anytime, Jeff.
Albert Breer, NFL Network insider, and there is no offseason in the NFL. There's no offseason in any sport nowadays. And the meetings will be here at the Biltmore. Here's a little bit of history for you. The NFL had their meetings here. They've had them several times here over the years. They had them in 1988, the spring of 1988. And at those meetings, NFL owners approved the move of the St. Louis Cardinals to Phoenix. I remember that very well because I covered that event, and it was in 1988. It was kind of a formality type of vote because they were going to move anyway. But Bill Bidwell has always been a league guy and follows the letter of the law when it comes to league rules, and so he went to the owners looking for approval and got it. And I remember just camped out there for 3 or 4 days at the Biltmore, ended up interviewing Chris Berman at one point. It was quite a scene. As a kid, I never dreamed of the day we'd have the NFL here. And now we've had them here for a quarter of a century. Hey, we've had the NBA here for over 40 years. So let's talk to Tim Kempton about tonight's Suns game. Huge. And we'll talk about it with him right after this on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Well, yesterday's awkward moment on the Brad Sesmatt Show was when I interviewed Tom Candiotti, who I hadn't spoken to. I really hadn't spoken to since the end of last season. Texted with him, but no conversations. Today's awkward moment is with Tim Kempton, guy I know very well. I've been to several games this year, haven't had a chance to get down to the floor to talk to him, but I've texted him a couple of times, and I never hear back from him. So I forced TK to come on this show so I could talk to him, and I'm doing it in the middle of the Notre Dame Northeastern game. Now, I can tell you that they're up 5, so you can breathe. How are you, TK?
Hey, Muddy, what's going on, brother? Actually sitting here watching the game as we speak. So I'm going to go outside so each possession doesn't get my blood pressure going the wrong way.
I kept telling Eric Sorensen, I said, you better make sure he's away from the TV because he may not be in a good mood. They were struggling in that first half, but
yeah, you know, Muddy, those first round games for the higher seeds are just survival mode.
Oh yeah.
You know, the Northeasterns, you know, they've had great years. You know, they won their conference tournament if they got in. They're riding high, and they're looking forward to it. And sometimes those upper seeds, they play a little tight. They know they're supposed to win, and they don't come out and play their natural game. All the credit to Northeastern. They're playing great, but hopefully the Irish pull it out.
Let me ask you a question real quick about Notre Dame before we get on to talking about the Suns. A lot of people around the country, when they list teams that can beat Kentucky, they put Notre Dame in that conversation because of their ability to shoot the ball, which is so vital against a team that rebounds the way Kentucky does. And I, if they get to meet one another, I'm certain, and for those who aren't aware, Tim is a Notre Dame alumnus, that you feel very confident about their chances if they get on the floor with Kentucky.
Well, just because of the contrasting styles, as you mentioned, Jeff, that would force Kentucky to have those big guys, whether it's Cauley-Stein or Towns, to come away from the basket and move their feet defensively because the Suns play with a smaller lineup. The Irish would have to would drag them away from the hoop, and they'd have to make a lot of shots to beat Kentucky. Kentucky's pretty darn good, but if you do get hot, you draw those guys away from the basket, and you make them play catch-up because you're making a bunch of threes, then it does lend itself to beating them, but that's a long way off.
You know what Eric Sorensen was just telling me? Is it Larry Brown that's saying that he thinks Kentucky, if they were in the NBA, would make the playoffs? I get so tired in the East. I get so tired of these people saying, how would Kentucky do against the Knicks or this? It's college basketball. I mean, it's just a silly thing, and I think it's somewhat I don't know, I don't want to use the word insulting to the NBA, but the thought that a college team of any talent level could go in and compete on a regular basis with any NBA team, I think, is ludicrous, isn't it?
Well, Jeff, you look at it, and I think it's ludicrous to say that they'd make the playoffs. Would they have a chance? I think six or seven of those guys are going to be in the NBA. So to say that, you know, they couldn't beat someone on any given night, I'm not so sure that's a long shot. You look at Cauley Stein and Towns and the Harrison twins, and you just go on and on and on with those guys. You know, Anthony Davis was on the team, and look at how good he's doing in the NBA. You know, 1 year removed from that college, he's still supposed to be in college. Anthony Davis is. So to say they could win on a nightly basis, I don't think that they could. They'd be kind of like the Knicks or Philadelphia, you know, at 20-22 wins right now. But to say that they couldn't beat an NBA team, I don't think that's an insult to the NBA. And I don't think it's as crazy as some people say, because six of those guys are going to be in the NBA next year. There's NBA talent on that roster.
That's a good point. We're talking with Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst. He'll join Al McCoy tonight for the call of the Suns and Pelicans at U.S. Airways Center. Let's just talk about the matchup first. First of all, what's the latest on Alex Len? According to my notes, he's still in a day-to-day mode and could be available tonight. Have you heard anything new on that?
No, not really. You know, Aaron Nelson and his staff doing a great job. And on top of that, Alex Len does a very good job with his listening to those guys and getting in there. He stays, you know, in the morning, gets extra treatment. But I just don't think it's, you know, you don't want to do something right now to stunt the growth of Alex Len. You don't want him to be in a walking boot for 2 or 3 weeks at the end of the summer. So there's no reason to really push him. He's done a phenomenal job this year. He's gotten better. He's proven that he's an NBA talent, and he has a lot of growth, and he's made huge strides. So there's no reason to put him in jeopardy to be in a walking boot for any length of time. So I think they're going to, you know, err on the side of caution, make sure that he's 100% to go. And then you throw in Brandon Knight along with him. That's two starters that you're missing out of your lineup to go against the Pelicans, who are playing at a high level with Anthony Davis right now.
You know, and I was at the game Sunday night, and I realized it was the Knicks, but I was awfully impressed with Brandon Wright's work inside. He had double digits in rebounding. And I thought to myself, you know, the other times that I've seen the Suns, and I've seen a lot of the games recently, you'd like to see them incorporate a little bit more size inside. And I'm going to admit that because of my own travels with the basketball team I cover, I haven't seen enough of the Suns to know whether or not playing Len and Brandon Wright together is really something that's doable. Is it doable?
I don't know if it is doable right now, money, just for the fact that who you're going to bring in behind those guys. You know, they're so short and thin on that front line. Alex Len, Brandon Wright, who's the next guy coming off the bench? You know, Earl Barron has done a nice job, but he's more of a pick-and-pop guy. And inside defensively, you know, he's not the strongest defensive presence in that low post. So if you bring Brandon right into the starting lineup, you better have a 15-point lead when you have to sit one of those guys to get a rotation going. So that's the hard part of playing those guys right now together if Alex Len was healthy. And without Alex healthy at all, you know, he goes into the starting lineup.
It seems to me, and again, I'm sitting up in the stands at a lot of these games, so I don't think it's fair for me to try to analyze from up there, and I'm not that great an analyst anyway. But it seems to me that the rotation is starting to settle into place now after all the trades. And I also sense that it's a more cohesive group defensively. The guys know now, they're more comfortable with where they're supposed to be in half-court defense. They're not getting burned as much on transition. Am I seeing that correctly?
I think you are, Jeff, and that just comes with time. Obviously, you know, at the trade deadline, we missed – move five guys and get back two. So, you know, to incorporate them in the lineup takes some time. And it not only for them, but but the new teammates. They have to understand what that guy in the lineup with them is capable of doing. Where do I have to be to help him out? What are his strengths and weaknesses? So it affects the lineup up and down. But time does help a lot in the NBA, and these guys are doing a good job adjusting on the fly with the changes.
How much has the change in personnel affected Jeff Hornacek's approach just in terms of his half-court philosophy?
Well, it's huge. I mean, you go from, you know, losing a guy that's been here for 3 or 4 years and Goran Dragic, who last year was an NBA, all-team NBA guy. So it has to affect it. And Jeff's trying to do a good job. I thought one of the things that they did really well this year was get Markieff Morris more back in his natural area, that low post area where he's so effective scoring. We've seen the maturity of his brother Marcus doing a better job on the perimeter in those situations. So it's tough, and Jeff's trying to put these guys in the best position that they're to be successful at. I think we've seen it. You know, he's had to juggle lineups at times. Gerald Green has been phenomenal, but, you know, he's fallen out of the lineup a little bit here in the second half of the season. And, you know, losing Isaiah Thomas, who was scoring 18 points off the bench in spurts. So he's had to make quite a few adjustments himself.
I noticed, too, that ESPN has a note that since the trades, the offensive production has declined from 105.9 points to 99.4. And I look at that and I think, well, that's just, you know, getting adjusted to new teammates. And would you agree with that?
Maybe not so. Part of it is adjusting, Jeff, but you got to look at the guys that we lost. You look at Goran Dragic, who was really, you know, a good scoring guard. You look at Isaiah Thomas, you know, part of it is his adjustment, but also part of it sometimes is the talent that you have on the floor. They've gotten smaller, and part of the Suns' effectiveness is rebounding and running. So you look at those stats, they're not rebounding as well. They're not turning guys over as much to get those easy baskets. That's the difference. You know, 99 to 105 is basically three baskets. Those could be transition buckets. They could be early offensive buckets if you're rebounding and pushing the ball a little bit better.
Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, joining us for a couple more minutes here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. You know, we've talked so much about the Suns. New Orleans is in the 9 spot, and the Suns are in the 10. So neither one of them are on the inside in the playoff seating. So New Orleans needs this game as bad as the Suns do, and that, to me, that translates into playoff-type intensity tonight.
Especially if you look at this little road trip for New Orleans, they have us, then they have Golden State and the L.A. Clippers. So they're looking at that. We better get this first one against the Suns, who are below us, because we may not, you know, win the next couple of games. They've been playing well, though. Winners of 10 of their last 13. Obviously, Anthony Davis is playing at a high level. Omer Asik is doing exactly what they need, a big guy that clutters up the middle, gets offensive rebounds, and is there for putbacks, and doing a nice job defensively. So you're exactly right. They're going to come out thinking, we better get this first one on this little road trip out west to at least keep pace with Oklahoma City and keep our playoff hopes alive as well.
Well, I'll tell you, as it's been fun, and I what I've been doing lately is taking my 19-year-old son on his days off from work to games, and I just want to tell you can relay a message to Jason Rowley. He loves fractured prune donuts.
Is that not the greatest food venue in the arena right
they
now?
They have done so much with the food options in the building. It's phenomenal what they've brought in this year. And I haven't tried them myself because I'm trying to stay, you know, disciplined on my diet. But, boy, it's really tough when you stand there and you watch them making those donuts. It's pretty intoxicating.
You need to break down. You need to give yourself, like, an off day or something and try to pack your donuts.
I might. I'm thinking of coming Sunday night. Hey, good to talk to you. I did send you a tweet last week, and I thought he may not think that's me. He may not recognize that it's me sending him a tweet. So if you didn't recognize the number, I'm sorry.
All right, buddy.
All right, pal. I'll come down and say hi next time I'm there.
Please do.
I'll do it. Thanks, Tim.
All right, brother.
Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, just one of the best guys. And, you know, the thing is, and I've had to learn this kind of the hard way as a play-by-play guy, that guy sitting next to you, a lot of times they're pretty smart. They know what they're talking about, and you'd be really smart to let them talk.
Let them do the heavy lifting, as they say.
You know what? I'm just going to tell this story about broadcasting. That's Eric Sorensen, by the way, up in the corner. You know what made Summerall and Madden work on TV? Summerall let Madden talk. And what do you know? They became the most famous football announced team in the history of the medium. And I always thought to myself, well, I didn't always think this. It dawned on me a couple of years ago. You know what? I need to shut up. You know, if I just call the game and I let the analyst go, it works a lot better. And
but
I've
that
always
takes
said,
time, doesn't it? I mean, it takes time to get into a flow when you're a play-by-play person and you're working with an analyst, because every analyst is different. Every play-by-play announcer is different. They each have their own style. Some like to talk more. Some like to talk less.
True,
some like to be more descriptive.
My style is I try to describe. Now, when I do basketball, I work with Maura McHugh, who used to be a head coach at ASU.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned so much basketball from her the last 5 years she's worked with me just by listening to what she had to say. And I take the same approach when I've done games. You know, I did games years ago with Tim Kempton on radio, and I learned so much baseball from Candiotti. And it just says to me, a lot of times in the booth, I don't say much off the air because I want to listen to Tom talk. If he's going to say something about this guy's not pitching well and here's why, it would be better for me to listen to him than for me to try to demonstrate to him that I don't know. You know what I'm saying? So there's your little broadcast lesson of the day for the day, kids. Everybody over at the Cronkite School.
Oh, you've been doing it a long time too, Jeff. You've been very successful.
I'm very old. No. Successful? I don't
know.
I still owe money on the house, so I don't know
don't
how successful
all?
I've been. That's right. You've got a new house, too. We're back. We'll go over a whole bunch of stuff in the world of sports. We might even have an Uncle Jeff story time. Who knows? As the Brad Sesmat Show continues on this Thursday.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
I'd like to point out to all of you, I'm Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks and ASU Women's Basketball in for Brad today. President Obama has done a women's bracket, and he's got ASU losing in the round of 16. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking as I'm watching him do this, has he even seen us play? No way he's seen us play. Does he know anything about Arizona State women's basketball? He's the leader of the free world. Has he got time to watch us play? Does he have the Pac-12 network?
Let's
at
hope
the White
not.
House.
Let's hope he doesn't have enough time to watch.
Well,
ASU
yeah,
women's basketball.
There is
no
that.
Offense to ASU women's basketball, but he is the POTUS.
That is a great question, by the way. I wonder if the White House gets the Pac-12 network.
Because I guess as if they wanted it, they could probably figure out a way
probably,
to get it.
Yeah. They could probably call DirecTV and say, hey,
hey, do me a solid.
And put it on there.
Or just do us a solid. You know, we'll make up our own channel for it. The White House has it.
White House has it. Nobody else does.
I guess President Obama, being from Chicago, he's probably more of a Big Ten guy than he is a Pac-12 guy.
I think he's
guy,
a Big so. Ten network guy. I would certainly think so. What else was on my mind? I had something rattling around in my head, and I can't remember it now. I know that there's one thing that that strikes me as odd, and I'm just going to point this out. And I think I've done this on podcasts, and I am going to record a new podcast today, I promise. I find it funny that the respective halls of fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, the Football Hall of Fame, have no broadcasters among their voters. And I just find that incredibly fascinating. I've mentioned this on the podcast before about the baseball voting, but the football one is the same way. Joe Buck, no vote. Al Michaels, no vote. Speaking of Al Michaels, I guess he's written a book. I haven't read it yet. I am going to get to it. I'm a little behind in my reading. But I would love very much to read that his book. And you may not be aware of it, that Al Michaels attended Arizona State University. I don't think he got his degree there because he disowns us the minute we don't start winning football games. He just, I didn't go to school there. I didn't get my degree there. But he did go to school here at Arizona State University. And so there's always been a strong feeling for Al Michaels on the campus of the Harvard of the West. So certainly I will be reading his book. very shortly. Here's something we can just follow up from yesterday. I got on this rant about ASU and the U of A, and I said in relation to Herb Sendek's tenure, and last night's win over UConn I don't think really turned the tide back in his favor completely. I will say this. If they were to get to New York to the semifinals of the NIT, they would be at 20 wins. And at that point, you kind of got to think, well, you know, maybe it's time to calm everybody down. They get Richmond Sunday night. They would get the winner of Alabama-Miami after that. So I don't think they're going to be prohibitive underdogs in either one of those games. Richmond is a very good team. They'll be playing at home, but so is UConn. So I'm not, you know, it's entirely possible that they could get through to New York. But in the discussion yesterday, we got a tweet from a gentleman who's obviously a U of A fan, and he said, how can you call ASU a football school when they've won only two conference titles in 37 years?
And we talked about this after the show. This isn't surprising. Whenever that's the great thing about this rivalry, ASU U of A, there's someone is always unhappy.
Well, I'm not going to get into the silly discussion of, well, how many Rose Bowls have you been to? Yeah, okay, if you're a football power, you win more than two conference titles. But I'm talking about a history and tradition with certain sports. Arizona has a greater basketball tradition over the last 32 years than Arizona State does, and nobody in Tempe is going to dispute that. By the same token, I don't think anybody's going to dispute the fact that Arizona State has accomplished more things in football over the last 32 or so years than the U of A. And it goes for baseball as well. Now, ASU hasn't won a national championship in baseball since 81. Arizona has won a couple since then. But if you're talking about the more accomplished program, I think you have to say Arizona State for the number of major leaguers they put out, the consistent runs to the postseason. There have been a few years recently where Andy Lopez didn't get in to the NCAA tournament. So, again, and I'm trying to be as honest and fair about this as I can and say that, you know, ASU is the football and baseball school. Now, the other thing I want to point out for all you youngsters out there, this is a quick Uncle Jeff story time. And I got enough time to do this. All you people that down at the U of A that, you know, want to say we're better than ASU and everything, I want to remind you of one thing. You wouldn't even be in the Pac-12 without us. A lot of people don't remember that when this discussion of leaving the WAC to go to what was then the Pac-8, that was U of A. They wanted to jump. They wanted to go. And they went to the Pac-8 at the time and said, we'd like to get in. And the Pac-8 said, you know what? The only way you're getting in is if you bring your brother in Tempe with you. Because Arizona State had a 70,000-seat football stadium. They had a growth market in Phoenix. The Pac-8 saw the dollar signs attached with bringing in a growth university like Arizona State. So they told Arizona, the only way you're going to get in is if you bring ASU with you. The Board of Regents at the time was predominantly made up of U of A alums, and so they voted it in. Boom, boom, boom. Both schools are going to the Pac-8 to become the Pac-10. The coaches at ASU didn't want to make the move, and not just because, well, we're used to, we like beating up on these bad teams in the WAC. It was hard on recruiting. Frank Cush said, we have to completely change our recruiting in a very short period of time to get up to speed in a power football conference that runs the ball a lot. So just remember, U of A, your success is tied to us. And don't forget it. More of the Brad Sesmatch Show coming up momentarily.